Soul Hunter, in which a mysterious alien, a hunter of souls, if you will, comes aboard the station. We are introduced to Dr. Stephen Franklin, gain some insights into Mimbari religious doctrine, and learn that Ambassador Delenn may not be what she seems.
Welcome to this week's episode of The Name of the Pod. I am your co-host, John Cassie.
And I'm your co-host, Chris Tatro.
In this episode of The Name of the Pod, we have the opportunity to explore the Babylon 5 universe through the episode Soul Hunter. In this episode, we're going to be taking a look at how moral and ethical questions are shaped and framed in the Babylon 5 universe and how that helps to drive story. We're going to be reflecting on what we know at present about the Minbari. We're going to be having a quick conversation about how what we know so far about the organization of Babylon 5 as a physical place, what that tells us about the economics of the 23rd century, that we're continuing to enact late capitalism. And we'll end the episode with a reflection on the gestalt of this episode, all of it taken together, and why, when taken together, well, I'm kind of showing our hand a little bit here, Chris, why, yep, when taken all together, this episode is actually representative of what happens when this show just doesn't quite come together, doesn't quite get it right.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, one of our mission statements with this is that we're not haters. We're not in this to bash on Babylon 5, because I think, as we said, like, in the first episode, yeah, we love it, and we're, you know, but at times we're like, why do we love this? Like any relationship. Right. You know, there's, you know, I love you, but for the love of God, I'm not sure quite why, right, at this, right, exact moment in, right, my life. And Soul, right, Hunter is one of those moments.
Right. Right. I love you, but I'm having a hard time liking you.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Now.
Shout out to our spouses.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know,
Allie won't listen to this.
You know, it's like almost right from the start in this episode where we're sort of, you know, we're sort of weirdly off track. I think that sort of Delenn in the med lab feels, mm-hmm, totally inauthentic to what we know about Delenn.
Yeah.
It just doesn't. I don't know, and maybe that's an attempt to show her as a different kind of character, but I just don't feel that we can go from the Minbari that we know to that behavior in one step.
Yeah, right? We move from the Japanese rock garden to her basically hissing, yeah, and, you know, showing, you know, tooth and claw, right, at this you know, unconscious figure in the, you know, helpless figure, right, in a med lab. Kill it now!
It's right. Like,
that's
it didn't resonate for me.
Too extreme too quickly.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I don't think we've seen a level of passion from Delenn or from the Minbari.
Right.
Well, she's the only one we've seen so far.
Right.
So well, other than the assassin, but
right.
Yeah.
A quick side note.
Mm-hmm.
I love the very subtle but massive upgrade in the makeup quality.
Oh yeah.
Between,
yeah,
Gathering and this episode.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. It's the classic example of you make 50 very small edits,
mm-hmm,
and now all of a sudden, she doesn't look like she's been constructed in a Hollywood lab. She looks like a real being.
Right. Well, do you know that the story behind where they were going with Delenn's character in the gathering?
I don't think I know this. Go.
I picked this up off of, I think it was the Lurker's Guide to Babylon 5 website, okay, somewhere. There's plenty of other places I've looked at that they were, the Minbari originally were going to be androgynous, and they were so the reason that she looks so wrong, I guess, is that they were trying to give her a more masculine kind of chin and cheekbones, uh-huh, and that kind of thing. And the original plan, in fact, was to alter her voice to make it in a deeper register, sort of in between. You know, so that, you know, spoilers, there's something transformation later on,
right,
that, you know, that changes her entirely. But they couldn't get the voice change,
uh-huh,
process just wasn't, it wasn't there technologically.
Yeah.
And so they just ditched it and said, okay, just go, you know, we'll make the effects look more like you and try, instead of trying to force some other kind of appearance onto the character.
Right, right. Totally interesting. I didn't know,
yeah,
that.
Interesting. It'd be a very interesting, interesting gender politics statement, you know, well ahead of its time.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, certainly something that the television of its time Star Trek The Next Generation, Star Trek Deep Space Nine, much too cowardly to do.
Well, Next Generation tried to kind of do it. The episode
Don't let them
Breaker.
Off the hook.
Oh, okay, yeah, fine.
No.
I won't let them off the hook. No, it was
I
a bad
put them on
anyway,
a hook
so.
Of yeah. chicken, bok bok yeah. cowardliness, yep. and they deserve
oh,
to be on that hook.
I wasn't phrasing. I was saying that. I was only saying they tried. They tried and failed.
They tried and died.
Yeah, yeah. So
look, what do we have? Okay, so we've got Dukat,
mm-hmm.
and we've got Grey Council. We've got evidence yep. of aristocracy.
Yep.
We've got a strongly honed Minbari understanding of something that passes on after life into mm-hmm. a new kind of life. So is it reincarnation? Right, Delenn
yeah.
calls it recycling, which is a little weird.
Well, you know, the 90s, they were starting to get into green.
Right, right.
But it's like, you know, it's like, I think, was it in the Richard Bachman kinds of, you know, books that I read shamefully at about the same time where all the souls go back into one big, like, soul bucket and
soul
are ladled
bat,
out
right.
again. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's definitely a recycling or a reincarnation element that goes on, right. which is why the Soul Hunter rankles her so, because I would have to imagine that's, you know, that is the greatest blasphemy. They're talking as if they know this to be true. This isn't a religious theory, but this is a fact.
Oh, this is fact. Right, right.
Yeah. And yeah, I guess, you know, anybody who's that deeply in a religion believes that what they we're going to get letters, what they believe to be absolute fact. Right. But
you know, good on them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, JMS and this episode's writer. I don't think this episode was written by. No, it was. Good on him for kind of staking that claim. You know, mm-hmm. nope, this is fact.
Okay? Yeah.
And I mean, you know that when you're going to spend a lot of time in sci-fi or in fantasy universes, you really need to be told what the rules are.
Right.
If you're going to have any understanding of how to interpret what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the soul is something,
mm-hmm.
right? What a human would call the soul, what human religions would call the soul, is a thing. It's something that can be collected. It is something that can be recycled. Okay, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I don't have to go into it in the way that. You know, the way that Dr. Franklin does, you know, kind of rejecting that from a purely scientific perspective, right?
No, he's playing the Scully hard here.
Yeah, right, right. He's rocking the Scully, right? So clearly the Minbari have this understanding of the afterlife. And the Soul Hunters clearly do too,
mm-hmm.
or they wouldn't be collecting, in particular, Minbari souls.
Right.
Right, which are the, you know, the filet mignon of
mm-hmm.
soul
mm-hmm.
hunting, right?
Yeah.
And that's useful because now we have the Minbari presented to us as having a kind of deep religious life.
Mm-hmm.
The
mm-hmm.
Centauri are depicted to us as having largely a secular
venal
yeah. louche mm-hmm. life, right?
Yeah.
And the Narn are sort of in this kind of warrior
mm-hmm.
Kind of place of mind with their culture. So we're getting a nice kind of refraction of mm-hmm. of understanding, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have their archetypes.
Totally. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're continuing to learn about the Minbari, and I think it's interesting that the way in which we're gonna unpack them in this particular episode is through a moral and ethical lens, because that's not something that television comfortably did when this show mm-hmm. was in first run.
No.
I mean,
no,
I can't think of the program that would place this kind of a claim out for conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, mm-hmm. I think that I would have wanted a little more story clarity about what maybe the humans should sort of think about this.
Yeah.
Right. Because all we get is sort of Franklin's science reason perspective, mm-hmm. right? It would have been interesting maybe to give us a little bit more of a religious, you know, what would an Earth religion think about this? Right.
Don't we get a line or two from Ivanova about this, or am I misremembering?
What it oh well,
honestly, I had to push this episode down pretty far to you know, blank it out in large points. But I thought that there was something where she was talking about.
Well, she does conduct that funeral.
Yeah.
Right? And it's straightforward, right?
Yep.
But it might have been interesting to give us 30 seconds of dialogue between Stephen Franklin and Susan Ivanova.
Yeah.
Right? Or to have Garibaldi, you know, share, hey, this sort of thing is happening. You know, I didn't think Centauri would, you know, stood for this kind of thing. And then, you know, the Centauri, you know, would be able to then explain kind of their belief on, you know, the afterlife or on moral questions. You know, the idea that a soul can exist, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that it plays a role in the development of society, future society, right?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I think it's to the show's great credit that they try, even when it doesn't quite work, you know, to raise it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I wonder if we're getting Dr. Franklin, which, hi, Dr. Franklin, welcome to the series. I think that's about all we need to say there. Are we getting his perspective as to be representative of humans here? It's only been, 10 years since the end of the Earth-Mimbari War?
Right.
So there may not have been a lot of, you know, cultural exchange, learning back and forth between the two, cultures at this point. Yeah, and what there was, I bet there'd be hostility to reception, and to any kind of, you know, anything other than the most sterile of academic exploration. But it certainly seems. I mean, Sinclair, I don't think really takes a stand on it one way or the other.
He doesn't seem to. Yeah.
No, he's just, all right, soul's cool, let's roll with it. but it's. I wonder if humans are thinking that, well, okay, fine, Mimbari believe in this stuff, well, that's fine, that's them, you know, but we're not buying into it at this point.
Right.
You know, I don't think we have any, at least not, well, certainly not to this point, we don't have any strong sense of Earth religion in the future.
Right.
You know, we've gotten sort of hints of politics and whatnot, but we don't have, you know, we don't get the sense of what's going on religiously back on Earth.
Right. Yeah, but definitely not. We'll get it.
Yeah.
We'll get it. I mean, it's coming.
Like, yeah, we don't, you know, we've got sort of like Star Trek where it seems, you know, space humanist atheism is, you know, ruling.
Right.
You know, we've kind of left these things behind, but,
right,
you know, we don't have that yet.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and it's interesting, and we'll sort of cycle back to this as sort of the emblematic problem question, right? Mm. You could have put the first line about soul business
mm-hmm.
in Ivanova's responsibility,
mm-hmm.
and she would have had a very different answer than Stephen Franklin, who as a doctor is sort of the very representative of space humanist atheism,
mm-hmm.
right? It's like, no, give us a clean break, give us someone else's perspective, and that's gonna be a sharper contrast to the rest of what's going on television.
I'd have much rather if Ivanova had had all of Franklin's scenes in this episode or for the rest of the series,
or
frankly.
Indeed, ooh, if she were fired. Also the doctor.
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, she's just telling ships where to dock. She can, you know, she can also like fix broken bones and things too. Yeah, she's got time. She's very efficient in Russian.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a little bit of a fanboy crush on Claudia Christian. Not a little bit, a lot of bit.
Maybe a lot of bit. No, yeah. I just think – I haven't
– She's great. Legitimately.
Wasn't she at Gen Con one of the years that we went?
Yes.
And I did not stalk her. We stalked Walter Koenig.
We did stalk Walter Koenig. We'll come to that when we actually introduce Mr. Bester. No, we'll save we'll save the Walter Koenig story.
Yeah. No, I really like Ivanova as the character. She's my favorite character of the series.
Yeah, totally.
I wouldn't say, you know, I have like a fangirl crush kind of thing going on. I just think she's a great character and I don't have a lot of use for Dr. Franklin. I'm sorry to say, but
correct.
That's the right answer.
Correct. That is the right answer. So,
but you know what? If I've learned anything from decades and decades of comics fandom,
right?
Which I am unabashedly a comics nerd, every character is somebody's favorite character.
Completely.
You know, somebody loves Bouncing Boy. Okay.
Right. You
know, so I'm sure that there are people out there who are screaming at their radios or iPods or whatever kids use to listen to these things today. We don't understand the merits of Dr. Stephen Franklin.
Right.
And I would encourage those people to write in to thenameofthepod@gmail.com and let us know exactly where we're wrong.
Right.
And we'll stop by the Facebook page, that sort of thing. We always wait until the end to mention the email address. Maybe
right.
the middle
well, I mean,
or beginning.
We should start with the email address in the future.
Yeah, yeah. We're professionals, folks.
Right, right.
Big time.
So shifting gears. Okay, so we've got this sort of Minbari and this sort of moral and ethical frame. Now we've got to also kind of chew on what this episode is telling us about kind of the poor, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like it's more than the sort of alien sector,
mm-hmm.
but there's a kind of gritty underclass on this station. This station is not that old. Where did these people come from?
Right? I know. You know,
why are there thousands of down and outs on a station? Yeah. It must be unbelievably expensive to get to. Are these the people who built the station?
You know,
they can't go home?
That could be. That would be pretty insidious and typically, you know, late capitalism to have the construction companies are like, oh, great opportunity in space. We'll give you this money. Oh, I guess, you know, you're kind of here. We're not providing transportation anywhere else. So good luck to you.
Right.
I don't know about thousands. We don't know the numbers, but because the sets are, you know, small and claustrophobic in almost every shot, you know, we've got the little, you know, find the ball kind of game situation, three card money, whatever going on, and a chase scene among the slums of the belly of the ship. I watched that scene and I actually paused for a second and I said, well, okay, now, you know, you come to 2017 and, you know, the Expanse, well, there's no shortage of, you know, space station slum kind of, I mean, that's the central theme of the Expanse in a lot of ways is look at this, you know, station where everybody's out of, you know, down and out. But 1994, I don't think we'd seen this kind of, you know, this kind of thing, you know, in Star Wars. Okay. We've got like Mos Eisley and things like that, but so what does this tell us about the economics that these people are here and they got here somehow. And I would not suspect that interstellar travel is cheap. So they were either tricked or cheated out of their money, or maybe they spent their last pennies to get to this place thinking, you know, I will find an opportunity there. Is this kind of a gold rush situation Grapes of Wrath? You know, we picked up everything that we had and jumped on a freighter to get to Babylon 5, and because we heard, you know, that it's Big Rock Candy Space Station, and you know, we get there and there's really nothing for us.
Yeah, there's nothing going on.
So, you know, and despite the fact that this is the fifth of the Babylon stations,
right?
These things ain't cheap to build. This is what, a quarter mile long. They say it at length in some point exactly the
2,500,000 tons of spinning metal all alone in the night.
Yeah,
that's not a Toyota Corolla, people. Right. I mean, it was built by the Earth Alliance. Good grief.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's bankruptingly expensive.
Absolutely.
I would think.
And five of them.
And five of them. Right.
And you know,
well, and now, in fairness, we don't really know about Babylon's 1, 2, and 3, only that they were destroyed in – right. Only Babylon 4 became operational. Right.
But there's still to get far enough to say that there actually was a Babylon 1 at some point, you know, there had to be some space girders welded together, at least a couple of them, and getting them there totally. And setting them up and everything is a huge expense. So, right. you know, there's definitely money out there, and it's not getting distributed evenly.
Right.
Like we would see in the other franchise of the day in Star Trek.
Right. In Star Trek, The Next Generation.
Oh, right. Definitely. Now, in Next Generation.
In fairness, DS9 introduces Ferengi and Cardassian notions of value.
Yep. Right.
Which change the sort of replicator-based, no scarcity space socialism.
Yeah.
Right. That is clearly not the economic framework that we have in Babylon 5.
No, it's much more like today. So I guess I guess the Bernie Bros can all, weep that they're not going to have the grand revolution anytime in the next 250 years. We're going to get
the revolution has happened and it has been replaced by Folgers crystals.
It all comes around again.
Everything comes around. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I found this an interestingly unexplored subtext.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
You could easily have run some character perspectives through that lens, daily life on the station kinds of things. Because there are times when he's going to bring in characters who he uses only for a single season.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And we
have a seat. There's definitely a seedy underbelly. We've got this Mantis Thrycreen Zorak kind of a crime boss going on.
Right.
Who, God save us from that effect. We know that there are there is some sort of criminal industry that's happening. And even though we do have the Ferengi and whatnot on Deep Space Nine, I don't think that we saw full scale criminal operations happening anyplace on the station.
You might describe Quark's entire outfit as a criminal enterprise.
He's a legitimate businessman.
He's a legitimate businessman. That's right. Yes. You know, I'm a culture. What did he? What was the? We need a neighborhood. Oh, crap. What was it called? What did Sinclair? Good grief. Cisco said we need a. We need a. It'll never come to me. Some kind of we need a pillar of decency in the neighborhood. You expect me to be a pillar of decency? Ha 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 ha. Well, Quark, I'm not going to give you an exit permit to leave this station, so you better get used to staying here because you're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, we could talk about kind of race framing around the mm-hmm. Ferengi forever. I kind of wonder about the casting of the kind of sort of an insect alien as a crime boss as this is an Earth Alliance station. A proper business is going to be conducted by someone who could go anywhere.
Right.
It seems to me
not somebody who's stuck in a chamber with a non-oxygen atmosphere when, 90% of the station is oxygen. Right. That's severely limiting your economic opportunities.
Right. Right. So I suspect that the question of kind of where are we in the late capitalist framework will continue to unpack as we learn more about how Earth cultures work and how these how these people who don't quite have a sense of how to make it work in this universe have to get paid.
Yeah.
Right? So what are they doing, right?
Yeah, and I wonder if this is an issue that Straczynski had fully thought through at this point, as opposed to we just need to put in something. Well, we'll have the ball game going on, and who gets killed? Well, it's just some sort of space hobo anyway. So
yeah, right.
It's not really going to matter. But he is known for planning things out. So yeah. I kind of have to give him the benefit of the doubt, but based on last episode and his exploration of the Earth politics. I'm not sure how much benefit there.
We may be seeing a certain degree of the airplane being built while it's ascending to 25,000 feet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which you know, fine.
Yeah.
These things are hard to write. He's got a vision. He's trying to execute the vision. You can't hit everything all at the same time. But I think, Chris, you and I would agree that at the end of the day, this episode doesn't work.
Yeah.
Now, what to you, why doesn't it? Why doesn't it work?
I think it's trying to present the ethical dilemma, the two different points between the soul hunter and the Mimbari concept of the souls. And it's trying to put forward soul hunter, at least soul hunter number one, as that he's doing good. He's saving these souls. He calls them my children.
Right.
He's really and he says everything started going wrong when the Mimbari stopped them, you know, and he wasn't able to get Dukat's soul, and they formed this sort of wall to block, and that's when everything fell apart. But he's presented, if he'd been presented a little more on level and less fanatical,
right,
I think that it would have been a stronger episode. You know, instead of this raving and the chanting.
I'm just going to say it again, the chanting. You cut that out, and this episode raises a whole grade for me.
Yeah.
I cannot bear it when this stuff happens. And this happens constantly in this program. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. This kind of like, you know, heebie-jeebie, mumbo-jumbo kind of chanting, and it drives me crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And the actor, side note here.
Side.
The actor playing Soul Hunter number one. Is in everything.
Okay.
He's credited here as W. Morgan Shepherd. William Morgan Shepherd.
Okay.
His IMDb page goes on and on. And I had recognized him, or thought I'd recognized him initially, from I guess it was a couple of years back now, a Doctor Who episode.
Oh, okay.
He plays the elder Canton Delaware, who's sort of the modern, you know, the modern day character, and then they go back into the 60s and they meet his younger self. But he's also been in Next Generation. He was Dr. Ira Graves in The Schizoid Man. Yeah.
Really?
The face John's making right now is a really – yeah. Well, IMDb never lies. He was in Star Trek VI, Undiscovered Country, as a Klingon. Diplomat.
I'm making the face again.
He's making the face again. He was in Voyager, so he's been in a lot of the Trek. He's definitely a genre kind of guy.
Yeah, sure.
He was in American Gothic.
No way.
Yeah, I haven't watched American Gothic in years. I need to go back and watch that.
In my Hulu queue right now.
Yep. He was Blank Reg on Max Headroom.
Oh my lord.
And he looked old as dirt then, and.
Right.
And he's still going. He was in The Prestige. He was in the Transformers movies. He's done a little bit of everything. So I just want to give a big shout out to William Morgan Shepherd, who I think is great and has done just great stuff. But here he's just chomping on scenery so badly.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's, we're talking about the flaws of the series as exemplified by this episode. That's the biggest one, is, you know, not having the directorial restraint to say, let's take you're at an 11. I need you at about an 8 right now.
Let's bring
this down pretty significantly. Let's not ham it up too much. And because those are the points where the show is just too painful to watch.
I have almost nothing to add to that. You've totally captured it. We're at 11. We need to be at more like a 6.
Yeah.
Or a 7, right?
Mm-hmm.
Be a little bit more mysterious. Be a little bit more menacing. Be a little bit more alien.
Mm-hmm.
Don't just be a scene chewer, right?
Yeah.
And that would have made him more mysterious, and it would have kicked up the what is this guy actually up to? Right.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than, as it turns out, you know, kind of what he was up to, which was interesting enough, but
we have to get the second Soul Hunter to come in as kind of the, like, hey, you know, we're still, you know, really unbelievably horrific according to the Minbari anyway, but this guy's way out there on the fringe, and we're not, you know, we're not all like that, and he's clearly lost it.
Right.
You know, bring it down. Oh, you only need one of these guys. You don't need, well, maybe from plot purposes you need two, but have it, leave it as a question.
Right.
You know, even though the show, I don't think, strongly comes down on one side or the other of a lot of these ethical kinds of issues.
Right.
And that's a flaw also, as we've discussed before. But, you know, but in this case, they don't necessarily even leave it open. They raise the question, they don't answer it, but they make one side so twisted and distorted, you know, that he's just going to go out and eat babies.
And
it's it just, you know, you could play more to the gray tones there.
Right. My last quick point on this is the last time I put together a kind of viewing agenda to learn about one actor's career, I watched every movie in which Cary Grant appeared.
Mm.
Totally interesting. Totally side note. I'm going to totally have to do a William Morgan Shepherd now.
Excellent. Well, that'll keep you busy for a while.
Right. In fairness, it would appear that I've seen essentially everything he's been in already without knowing.
Yeah.
Right? So folks, we come... We come close to the end here, as we always do. We're looking at a particularly Straczynskiist piece of dialogue, or you know, a piece of clever dialogue. I'm not playing this game by the correct rules, because my line is also a sort of a clever line. It's not a particularly speechifying line. So you want to hear it?
Go for it.
Okay. This is
because I couldn't find a clever line or a good line in this episode.
So you don't have
anything. I would love to hear yours. No, I've got. I come to the table empty-handed.
Then it'll be me ending this episode with the Soul Hunter describing the Minbari as pale and bloodless. Look in their eyes, and you see nothing but mirrors. I think that tells us a lot about the Minbari, whether we can trust it or not. Because this Soul Hunter is clearly cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs is a separate question. Mm-hmm. On that note, our conversation about the Soul Hunter and the Minbari comes to its natural end.
Merciful
end. Folks, as you know, the name of the pod at gmail.com. Go look at our webpage. Go talk to us on social media. Go give us some 5-star reviews, or 4 or less,
6.
If you're so inclined. Give us a Babylon 6-star review. And we're looking forward to seeing you next time when we get to talk about The Color Purple in a fashion.
Not exactly.
Not exactly.
Yeah. But yeah. Okay.
Thanks, folks. See you next week.
See you.